Roughly Speaking with Dan Rogics is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy Bookshop, your book is waiting.
Hello again from the Baltimore Sun, Dan Rogics here, Sun columnist, and this is Roughly Speaking, episode 385 for Wednesday, May 9th, 2018. Kevin Kamenetz, the Baltimore County executive who was running for governor, visited us the other day, his second appearance on Roughly Speaking, and he brought along his running mate, former Montgomery County Councilwoman Valerie Ervin. The Maryland primary election is June 26th. Kevin Kamenetz is a Democrat running in a crowded field of candidates who want to face Republican incumbent Larry Hogan in November. So a couple of things today. I'm going to ask Kevin Kamenetz why Maryland Democrats should choose him over his primary opponents. And we get to meet his running mate, Valerie Ervin. Ms. Ervin, nice to meet you.
Pleasure.
I'm pleased to actually introduce you to the next lieutenant governor of the state of Maryland,
okay.
Valerie Ervin.
Valerie Ervin, I was wondering, Kevin Kamenetz picked you as his running mate. Were you expecting this? I mean, around Christmas time, were you thinking about it? When was your first contact with Kevin Kamenetz about this?
And I was just minding my own business, you know, working at the Working Families Party, running the Maryland work for them here. And it came as a total surprise, to be honest with you. I saw a blog post that had a photograph of me and my entire life history was written. And I thought, well, that's interesting because I've never spoken to that blogger before. And then the very next day, I got a call from the Kamenetz campaign, and then we were off to the race.
But you knew Kevin Kamenetz.
I knew him, yeah. I was on the Montgomery County Council for two terms. So, you know, when you're elected locally, you belong to the Maryland Association of Counties. And I knew Kevin from there and had come to find out that he was the longest serving member of the Maryland Association of Counties. But I knew about Kevin. I'd read about him. You know, he's a pretty strong figure in Maryland politics, being the county executive of, you know, one of the biggest counties actually in the country, in a very well-known county. So I knew of him.
And we also went to the convention together in 2016 in Philadelphia.
Yeah, Kevin was a delegate for Hillary Clinton, and I was a delegate for Bernie Sanders.
Why did you pick Valerie?
Well, Valerie is a great human being, and she is well qualified to serve in my stead as governor. She was previously elected to a term on the Montgomery County Board of Ed and two terms on the Montgomery County Council, where she chaired the Education Committee. But importantly, Valerie has great policy chops. And she shares a passion that I do as well with achieving good things and really making a difference in government. So she's a delightful person, and we're trying to make sure that everyone, particularly in the Baltimore region where she's not really known, have a chance to meet her. And when they do, they walk away very impressed.
The June primary is, what, 6 weeks, 7 weeks away, June 26th. And I've been following the forums of gubernatorial candidates, the Democrats. All of you seem to agree on many things. So how do you distinguish yourself from the others?
The key is really having the most experienced team. I mean, you know, look, there's a fine group of candidates, and they all want to save the world from Trump. But the real issue is who is the most qualified and experienced team who can actually get things done? It's not a matter of just talking the talk. It's an ability to walk the walk. And Valerie Ervin and I are the most qualified ticket because we've both delivered real results in government, which is really the key. I mean, you know, a lot of the candidates say, well, they start off by saying, well, I'm not a career politician. Well, I don't think if your doctor told you you had a heart ailment and he referred you to a cardiologist, would you go to the career cardiologist or would you go to someone who doesn't have any of that experience? I mean, the key here is, as we're seeing in Washington, president and governor are not entry-level positions. So the whole idea of having the experience is you know how government works, but also it gives you a track record to understand what have been your priorities, and that's an indicator of what you will then do as governor and lieutenant governor. So as Baltimore County Executive, I've done record investment in school construction. We're building or rebuilding 90 schools. We've done creative job creation. I took an abandoned steel mill at Bethlehem Steel, and it's now the largest industrial redevelopment on the East Coast with 17,000 jobs coming with the likes of Under Armour, FedEx, and Amazon, but also port-related activities. And I've done it all without ever raising the tax rates. In my 24 years in office, 16 as council, 8 as executive, we'd never once raised the property tax rate or the income tax rate. That's a real record of success. And Valerie has a host of successes as well on the Montgomery County side. This is who we, you know, people should want as leaders. Because frankly, Valerie and I want to get things done again in this state.
I really like that question. I wanted to kind of add to it as someone who didn't get into the race until February. I was looking at all the candidates myself as a voter. And I can say when I start comparing the list of people running for governor, I ask myself the same question. I'm going to vote for somebody that's going to move an agenda forward for people in Maryland. And many of them have no government experience, prior government experience. They're all fine people. But we're going to try to take down Governor Hogan, and I think we're the only team that can actually do that. And so for whatever reason, people who may be listening to this podcast are asking themselves, what makes you, Valerie and Kevin, different from any of the rest? I would say that we have spent a good amount of our adult lives doing exactly what we're doing, and that is to try to make people's lives better through the legislative process, by initiating projects and programs that help families and children and working moms. And I put myself in that category because way before I ran for office, I raised two kids on my own as a single mom. And so I think I speak for lots of women. This is, they say, the year of the woman in Maryland because so many women are running for office. Women want to see people who can relate to their experience. And, you know, I'm not a wealthy person. I came out of the labor movement. And I really believe strongly that government matters and that the people you elect actually do make a difference. And I think that's what sets Kevin and me apart from the rest of the field.
We'll hear more from Kevin Kamenetz and learn more about his running mate, Valerie Ervin, after this message from the Ivy Bookshop about an upcoming event.
This month, the Ivy welcomes Michael Downs to celebrate the launch of his book, The Strange and True Tale of Horace Wells, Surgeon Dentist. Downs imagines the mysteries behind the true story of Horace Wells, who first used laughing gas as an anesthetic, reshaping medicine and humanity's relationship with pain. Thursday, May 10th at 7 p.m. at the Ivy Bookshop, 6080 Falls Road. For more information, call 410-377-2966 or go to www.theivybookshop.com. The Ivy Bookshop, your book is waiting.
Now more with Kevin Kamenetz and the woman he chose to run with him for the Democratic nomination for governor and lieutenant governor, Valerie Ervin. Valerie, tell me a little bit more about yourself. Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? And what was your first step into politics?
Yeah, well, I'm an Air Force brat. I was born on Guam. My father was in the Air Force for 28 years, so as a child, I grew up being the new kid in school like every couple of years. And I got really involved in the labor movement when I was 16 years old. My mom, who worked at a Safeway store in Albuquerque, New Mexico, told me that I needed to get a job to pay for all the things that I wanted to have. And there were five kids in our family, and my parents both worked. So I started working. I was bagging groceries in a Safeway store at 16 and got bitten by the union bug and became very, very involved in my local union. To make a really long story short, I became the first African-American woman ever hired by my local and began to travel the entire state of New Mexico. And for people who don't know anything about New Mexico, it's a big state. and that's where I really learned the craft of organizing people. And got to work on lots of political campaigns. For example, Bill Richardson, when he first ran for Congress in New Mexico, I worked on his campaign. I went over to Texas to work on Ann Richards' first campaign for state treasurer. And so I knew that my life was going to be one of service, but particularly in the service of electing folks who would represent working people the best. And so I came to D.C. in 1987 to work at the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union, where I became the assistant director of their newly formed women's department. And back then, what I used to do, most women didn't do in unions. I was sent out to work in Indianola, Mississippi, and on a huge campaign that had real national implications to organize about 1,000 black women workers who worked in catfish, on catfish farms. They used to pick cotton, and then when cotton died, they built catfish farms, and that's where women worked. And so we organized that factory, that plant, and got a contract there, and then I was in high demand after that and organized all over the South for the next decade. I then had 2 children and decided to get off the road, and that's when I really got angry as a mom, and I got angry around the public school situation, where I thought public schools should be equitable and make sure that all children were able to succeed, and that's not what I was seeing. And so I was really pushed and cajoled into running for the Board of Education.
In Montgomery County.
In Montgomery County. And I actually ran a campaign very, very much like a union organizing drive and had to run countywide. And people thought, who is this woman? And I ended up winning. I served 2 years, and then ran for the county council, where I served 2 terms, the only African-American woman ever elected on the Montgomery County Council.
And did you feel you were done with politics after that?
Yeah, you know, I left politics 4 years ago and was hired by the Working Families Party out of Brooklyn, New York, to run their C3, their nonprofit side called the Center for Working Families. And I loved every bit of it because I got to do on the national level what I did at the local level, which was to fight on behalf of women and children by passing progressive legislation in state houses and city councils,
like,
all over the country.
Like what?
The biggest one would be the Fight for 15. The Fight for 15 is to pass the ability for city councils and county councils and county commissions to pass ordinances that would allow their employees to be paid $15 an hour as the minimum wage. And we know that that matters. So if you're a working parent and you're a single working parent and you're making, you know, $9.25 an hour, you're in poverty. And so that was one of the big ones. But there's this issue of fair scheduling, which is a huge issue in this country. So I'll use Starbucks as an example because they've been in the news a lot lately anyway. But if you work at Starbucks, they can call you in at any time. And once you're there, they can make you stay longer without your approval. And I know, as somebody that came from unions, the boilerplate contracts for union employees is working hours. Like, you should be able to have your schedule a week ahead of time. And if you have children, you want to know, because you got to provide childcare for those children. And so this is a big issue we're working on here in the state of Maryland and all around the country. And these issues all impact families.
You also work toward paid sick leave in Maryland, right?
In a very big way, yes. And also in D.C., which passed recently on the city council. Before I became involved in politics, I was a union organizer. And for me, they're very similar. I think that this campaign is a really exciting one because I get to get outside of Montgomery County, where I'm well known, and learn a little bit more about the state that I've lived in for a very long time. And it's an interesting state. From jurisdiction to jurisdiction, people are not concerned necessarily about the same things. But I think that Marylanders choose their leaders very carefully and very wisely. And I think that's why Kevin and I are such a great team for Maryland, because I think we mirror the kinds of people that live here in Maryland. Our experiences are very different, but at the end of the day, what we care about is the same thing, and that is to build a stronger Maryland for the future. And because we have such great abilities because of our experience, that we think that we're the team that can step right into the governor's office on day one.
What do you hear from people? You say people have different interests, different priorities, and different jurisdictions, but since you've been campaigning in the Baltimore area, what do you hear from people here?
Well, in the Baltimore area, clearly one of the biggest issues is outside of education, which is the number one issue everywhere. It's transportation options and the fact that there are very few. I've been driving a lot on 695 and 95 over the last 3 months, and I know that there's a lot of concern about how much more congested these highways can get. And Kevin and I want to really focus when we're governor and lieutenant governor on what we can do in the Baltimore region to bring the kind of transit-oriented options that people in other parts of the state have, especially in the D.C. region, which, you know, people have lots of options. They can take the metro, they can drive if they want. The bikeway situation and how in Montgomery County and the District of Columbia have created amazing options for people who want to ride bicycles. So there's lots of options. You can walk, you can ride a bicycle, you can get in your car, you can take the train. And I think that those kinds of options also build the kind of economic development that grows great communities.
As we in Baltimore know, we have a substandard system of mass transportation. And the things that you just spoke about that Montgomery has, if you think about it, every world-class city has a modern, multi-jurisdictional, multimodal mass transit system. London, New York, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., and Baltimore just has the crumbs. And this is a real serious impediment to advancing the future of the Baltimore region.
Okay, this is a good subject, so let me bear down on this a little bit. How would you improve it? What do you think we need in this in transit in the Baltimore area?
Let me just relate a story. I was visiting a fellow in Essex who owns an HVAC operation, and I said, "How's business?" He says, "It's great." I said, "So what's the problem?" He says, "I can't get reliable help." I said, he's off the beaten path, so to speak. I said, "No, you can't get help with reliable transportation. It's unreasonable for someone to have to travel for an hour and a half and change buses multiple times for each commute and expect them to show up to work on time." So in the early 80s, Baltimore subway system started at the same time the Washington subway system started. And they got, they being the Washington area, got this multi-jurisdictional system that really allows people, if they choose to not have to take their car to get to point A to point B. Baltimore region, we just got two independent rail lines that don't intersect. Both have a terminus in Baltimore County, and the Red Line would have, it's not some great panacea, but at least it would have offered us a third link that would have gone east-west. It would have had its terminus at Social Security Administration, and we were negotiating in Baltimore County for Social Security to have an improved stop there, because we know that mass transit options help employers, particularly today's millennial who doesn't want to own a car, doesn't want to own a home, and they are attracted by the use of mass transit other than bus.
Okay, so we don't have a red line. Governor Hogan killed it, and the money's gone.
Without any public conversation.
Right, I know.
And
we've gone over that. But I asked you, what would you do? Would you what? Would you revive the red line, or would you try to improve the bus system? What would you do?
I think we have to jumpstart the concept of mass transit, and I would look for, at a minimum, a spur that goes from Social Security Administration to Lexington Market. So at least we're bringing a tie in. But here's where I see the biggest failure. We failed to advertise mass transit as a regional solution. So right now, people think, oh, this is just Baltimore City, but it's really not. In Baltimore County, we've got the terminus at both Owings Mills and Hunt Valley, and I've jump-started those two locations and built the region's only transit-oriented developments. We've had $650 million of private investment in Owings Mills with the Metro Center, which I jump-started with the building of a library and a community college. in Hunt Valley, putting apartments above the Wegmans. Seems like an odd mix there, but it really is doing well. And across the street, McCormick Spice is building their brand new headquarters building with 900 employees. So employers know they need to locate next to mass transit to attract that talent pool that they need. We lost Amazon for one main reason. And by the way, I am the Baltimore County executive. I could have selected sites for Amazon too, their East Coast headquarters. But instead, I wrote an op-ed saying I support Port Covington because I thought that was best for the region.
The city. Yeah.
Yes. And I think one of the problems that we had was that there was no mass transit link there. And I think that heavily impacted their decision.
You can learn more about Kevin Kamenetz on The Issues by visiting the Roughly Speaking archives and listening to my earlier one-on-one with the Baltimore County executive. He and his running mate, Valerie Ervin, are candidates in the June 26th primary. Be listening for more interviews with the Democratic candidates for governor in the coming weeks. That's our show for now. Your thoughts are always welcome by email, Twitter, or on Facebook. Please tell your friends about the podcast, and if you get a chance, review our show on iTunes, your Apple Podcast, or on Stitcher. For producers Steve Early and Quinn Kelly in the Baltimore Sun Newsroom, I'm Dan Rodericks. Thanks for listening to Roughly Speaking, and we'll see you again soon.
Roughly Speaking with Dan Rodericks is brought to you by the Ivy Bookshop, an independent bookstore at Falls Road and Lake Avenue in Baltimore. The Ivy stocks a wide selection of books covering Baltimore and the Chesapeake Bay region, many by local authors. Located at 6080 Falls Road, more information can be found at theivybookshop.com or by calling 410-377-2966.